Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, stepping up, being responsible, and doing your part. This is Ruth 3. So, how reliable are you? Are you someone that everyone knows they can call anytime they need something? The person that will do whatever needs to be done, no matter the cost to them? Or do you shirk your responsibilities and pawn it off on someone else? Today, we're going to take a look at this entire family. The first week, we saw that Naomi was trying to take care of Ruth and her other daughter-in-law by trying to get them to go back home to their families and find a husband and have a family of their own, and how Ruth did not do that. She took care of Naomi instead, went with her, and then she went to glean in the fields and provide for them. And then we saw how Boaz was kind to her, and we talked in that episode about how, you know, her kindness was coming back on her. But today, we're going to see how just everyone is working together. This person is taking care of this person at this moment, and then later, that person takes care of another, and they're all working together in order to do whatever is needed. And as soon as they're called upon, they step up. Everyone does what they should be doing, and they don't pawn it off on anyone else. And so let's go ahead and read in Ruth 3. The very first verse says, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you?" Remember, in the very first episode, in chapter 1, verse 9, Naomi was telling both of her daughters-in-law, "I want you to find rest in the home of a husband." And so she's using those exact same words here, and she says, "Shouldn't I seek rest for you?" And so she hasn't forgotten the mission that she has, the way that she is going to take care of Ruth, right? She sent Orpah home, and Orpah's mom is the one and dad that are taking care of her and helping her find a husband. But this is Naomi's responsibility now. And now that they're settled in Israel, she's like, okay, I need to do my part. This is my responsibility, and I'm going to do what I need to do. And Boaz is the obvious choice, right? He's the one that she had previously said was their kinsman redeemer. And so in verse 2, she says, "Is not Boaz our relative with whom the young women you were working? See, he's winnowing the barley tonight on the threshing floor." And so Naomi knew that when the men would do this, they would also stay the night there on the threshing floor to keep their grain safe so that no one would steal it. And so she says in verse 3, "Wash therefore and anoint yourself with oil and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor, but don't make yourself known to the man until he's finished eating and drinking." And so she's telling her, like, hey, get cleaned up, get dressed up, and go down and meet this man. And her getting dressed up may have just been like, hey, put on your best clothes. But it also could have meant take off your mourning clothes, the clothes that she's been wearing that shows she's lost her husband, and put on your, hey, I'm available now clothes, right? Let this man see that you're no longer mourning your dead husband and that you're available to him at this point. That could be the case. Or it could just be that she's just putting on her best clothes. As far as anointing herself with oil, this could have also just been a normal part of women getting ready back in that time. Or it could have been fragrant oil. Oil that smelled like perfume. So it's like, put on your dating clothes, put on your perfume, go meet this man, right? Either way, we know that she is showing herself available to him. And so after she tells her to get ready, in verse 4, she says, wait until after he's done eating. She said that in verse 3. And then in verse 4, she says, "But when he lays down, observe the place that he lays, and then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and then he'll tell you what to do." Now, this sounds strange to us, right? But what she's doing is Boaz would not have approached her because he's much, much older than her. And he knows that her husband has just died, and it would not be appropriate for him to approach her. And so she has to approach him and say, hey, I'm available and I'm choosing you. And by going and laying down at his feet, she's kind of showing her submission to him. The feet is, you know, the lowliest part. And so she's saying, hey, I'm submitting myself to you, uncovering your feet, saying, I would like you to place your covering over me. Be my protector. And so this is all a bit of symbolism on her part. And this is what Naomi is instructing her to do. And she says, after you do all of this, then Boaz will take it from there. And so in verse 5, Ruth says, okay, I'll do everything that you said. And so she went down to the threshing floor just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. Now, I want to stop and tell you a little bit about the threshing floor. Where this was usually a very hard foundation on the eastern side of the city, and they would thrash the grain, and then he presumably would sit down to eat and then let the west wind blow all the chaff away, and then he would go and sleep there to protect it. And so it says she does all this. And then in verse 7, it says, when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went down to lie at the end of the heap of grain. And then she came softly and she uncovered his feet and she lay down. At midnight, he was startled and turned over, and behold, there was a woman laying at his feet. And he said to her, who are you? And he's kind of asking, like, not only who are you, but what in the world are you doing here, right? And so she responds, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. And do you remember whenever he first met her and he said, may the Lord reward you because you were so kind to Naomi and you've come here to seek refuge under his wings? She's using that same language towards him to say, basically, I believe that God is giving me refuge under his wings through you. You are the one that is going to cover me, protect me with your wings. I believe that you are that person. And so she's placing her confidence in him, right? And it's such a sweet thing what he says to her. He says, may you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And so he's saying, you know, I already knew that you were kind by what you were doing for your mother-in-law, but what a kindness you're showing to me now, that you would choose me to be your husband because you want me to redeem your family land, and you trust me, and you're not seeking after these younger men. The fact that you see that I'm able to take care of you and that you want me is such a kindness to me. But then he says, but there's a problem. He says, now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you what you have asked. For all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. So he's like, you're definitely an excellent choice for me, and I would love to marry you. But the truth is, I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer that's nearer than I. So he's saying there's a closer relative than I am, and he has the option to redeem you. Actually, if you're choosing to go this route of staying within the family so that you can get your land back, and not marrying someone outside of the family and forfeiting that land, if you're choosing to go the route of getting a kinsman redeemer, then there's actually someone that's closer to me. And so I have to ask his permission first before I can marry you. But if he turns it down, then I will definitely do this. And so then he says, I need you to lay here until morning, and then I'll address this situation in the morning. And so she laid down at his feet until morning, and then she arose before anyone could recognize her. For he said, let it not be known that this woman has come to the threshing floor. And so he doesn't know if he's going to be the one that is with her permanently. But what he does know is he's going to protect her tonight, not let her go away, you know, this in the, at midnight. and risk her getting hurt along the way, and that he also is protecting her reputation. He doesn't want anyone to get the wrong idea because she's done nothing wrong here. And then he also doesn't want to send her away empty-handed. And so it says that in verse 15, it says, he tells her before she leaves, bring your garment that you are wearing and hold it out. And so she held it out, and he measured out 6 measures of barley, and he put it on her, and then she went away into the city. Now, some of the versions say 6 ephahs of barley, but it does not say that in the original version. It says measures, and so they are just speculating that that is the measure of barley because that's the measure of barley that she used whenever she thrashed her own grain and took it home. But she had gotten only an ephah of barley the first time that we heard this measurement, and that was 30 to 40 pounds worth of barley, just 1 ephah. So if he gave her 6 ephahs of barley, then, you know, that could have been 200 pounds worth, and she probably was not going to be carrying that home. And so most likely what they meant was she holds out her cloak, the covering that she has, and he just takes, you know, probably handfuls, 6 measures, just 6 scoops full or 6 handfuls, and puts it in her cloak, and then she carries that home. That's probably what they were talking about there. And then whenever she gets back to her mother-in-law asks her, how did you fare, my daughter? And then Ruth told her all that Boaz had done for her. And she said, he even gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, I don't want you to go back empty-handed. And so, you know, he always seems very conscious of the fact that Ruth is lacking and he's able to fill her need, right? And so this is just showing further that he does this in every situation. Every time that he sees she needs something, he fills that need. And so she tells that to her mother-in-law, and then her mother-in-law says, okay, well, all we can do is wait now. Let's wait and see what happens. And, you know, most likely they're really hoping for Boaz because she knows Boaz. She knows that Boaz is going to take care of her. And so most likely they're really hoping that this other guy turns her down. But I guess either way, she gets a husband and her land back if this man decides that he wants to do this. And so they're just waiting to see what God has in store for them. The fact that God led them to Boaz's field and not this other man's field kind of indicates that God is going to, you know, allow Boaz to be the one that marries her and redeems her land. But we're going to see what happens next week. We'll carry that story on into next week. And so that is the end of the lesson. And now what can we learn from that? What can we take away from this family? You know, as we are into the 3rd chapter now, I just keep realizing how they're all just taking care of one another. You know, Ruth, like I said before, she was taking care of Naomi by coming here with her and getting all of the food. But Naomi, from the very beginning, had been trying to take care of her by getting her a husband, and now she's following through on that. And then, you know, their husbands in the beginning took them to Moab in the first place to take care of them from the famine. And then Boaz took care of them initially by, you know, giving Ruth a field to glean in and giving her protection. And so everyone is doing this. And now they're asking that Boaz take care of them permanently. And he says that he's willing to do that. And so every time that they're presented with a situation to take care of another person, they do that. They step up and do what they're supposed to do, presumably out of duty and out of care, right? And then the other thing that I noticed is how they're demonstrating their willingness to do whatever it is that they need to do before they're asked to do something a little bit more. And so, again, you think about Naomi, and she demonstrated when they were still in Moab that she wanted to give Ruth a husband. And that's probably why Ruth trusted her enough to go with her, leave her own family that could have found her a husband and say, you know, I know that you're going to take care of me, Naomi. I know that you care about about my future. And so I'm going to go with you and I'm going to take care of you and I'm going to trust you're going to take care of me. And so you can see that they're both demonstrating these things from the very beginning. And then Naomi does carry through on that. And then Ruth demonstrates that she is willing to take care of Naomi by going with her and gleaning in the fields. And then she later steps up even further and honors her mother-in-law, saying, you know, I came with you acting as if you were my mother, and I'm going to honor you in the wish of who you want me to marry also. Trusting you as if you were my own mother, and as if this was my family, whose land I also care about and whose land I want to redeem, you know, because again, she could have married someone much younger and just forfeited that land altogether. But she first demonstrated that she was honoring and loyal to Naomi as if she were her own mother by following her. And now she's kind of stepping that up, saying, I'm going to do this forever. I'm going to marry the man that will redeem this land for you. And then Boaz demonstrated first that he was willing to take care of his family members' women, right? Because remember, he was kin to Elimelech and their sons. And all three of these men are gone now. And so remember how Naomi even said, whenever she found out that it was Boaz in the first place that had let Ruth glean in the field, she even said, bless this man for taking care of the living and the dead. And so he is honoring his responsibility towards his family members that have passed on by taking care of these women in the very first place. And since he did that, that's probably why Naomi is saying, you know, yeah, he's the natural choice to continue to take care of us forever, because he's already demonstrated his willingness to take care of us because our husbands are gone and he is our relative. And so she says, this would be the natural choice to also get our land back and marry you and become a permanent person to take care of us. And you know, when you do this, when everyone shows their willingness to take care of other people, then it gives those other people confidence in you. And so you place your trust in them and then you take care of them. And it's just a cycle of everyone taking care of one another, everyone trusting in one another to take care of them, everyone having confidence in each other. And you know, they're all doing this because they're family. And so sometimes they're the ones giving and sometimes they're the ones receiving. And nobody's keeping score. Nobody's worried. It's like, oh, I'm doing more for you. It's like, no, I know if I take care of you, you're going to take care of me. You've already demonstrated that you're going to take care of me. I'm going to demonstrate that I'm going to take care of you. We're all going to trust in one another and we're all going to step up and do what needs to be done. And so that makes me think, what are we like? Are we the type of people that step up when things need to be done? Do we demonstrate our willingness so that other people do have confidence in us? Are we reliable? Do people know they can call on us? Will we step up and take care of our responsibilities? Or do we shirk our responsibilities, pass them on to someone else and say, not my problem? Like, even though it really is my problem, even though I should be the one doing this, because like, specifically, you know, Naomi should do this if Ruth is not going to go home to her own family. Ruth should do this for Naomi because she doesn't have any other children. Boaz should do this because he is a next of kin. And so all of them are realizing, hey, this is my responsibility, my role in the family, and I'm willing to take on that. I'm not going to pass it off onto someone else. And so are we those types of people, or do we pawn it off on someone else and just say, yeah, sorry, I know that I should be the one that takes care of this, but I don't want to. All of these people could have done that, but they didn't. Instead, they all did what they could. When it was their turn, they stood up. And so let's look at each one of these. What did they have to offer? Naomi had the wisdom of an older woman, the ability to guide her, and she had family connections, right? And so these were all things that she could offer to Ruth. And so Think about yourself. Do you happen to be an older woman that could offer a little bit of wisdom to a younger woman that's just starting out, that might need your guidance, that might need your experience and your wisdom and what you learned from, you know, being a single woman or a young bride or a young mother or, you know, a wife and mom raising a family? Can you offer some wisdom and some guidance to a young woman? Is there anyone else that could benefit from your wisdom and that you could guide? Maybe a young couple that you might want to gently, you know, push together. You see, you know, something in their relationship and you're like, hey, I think that, you know, he might be interested in you. And maybe you could go about it in this way, letting him know that you're interested in him. I was actually, it's so crazy that this happened because I was just telling the story like 3 days ago about how my youth directors, the husband and wife, me and the wife were at a bake sale when I was in high school. And she actually kind of did this. She's like, hey, what do you think of this guy? He seems like he might be interested in you. Are you interested in him? You know, we have this trip coming up. Maybe you might want to show him that you're interested if that is the case. And that man was my husband. And so, you know, we have opportunity as people who are kind of from the outside and looking in, and we can kind of guide those couples and show them maybe how to go about showing that they're interested and, you know, getting together. Or maybe like Naomi, you have connections, you know, people because you are older and you can say, hey, I think, you know, this would be a good direction for you to go in or this direction. And I can, you know, set you up a meeting with this person so that you can speak to them and see if that's something that you're interested in or whatever. These are things that we can do as older women, right? And so if you happen to be in a situation like that, then do that. The woman that I said set me and my husband up, sort of, she wasn't an older woman, even my age at all. She was a young woman, actually, who had a few kids and had only been married a few years, but I was younger than her and not in the same place. And so you don't have to be a, you know, middle-aged woman or a grandma or a great-grandma in order to do this. You just need to be someone that's a little further along than someone else where you can say, hey, you know, I've been where you are and I have a couple of things that I could share with you that, you know, might be of benefit to you since I've been in that same situation. And so if you're in that place where you could do that for someone else, then be like Naomi and do that. And then Ruth, let's look at her. What did Ruth have to offer the family? Well, she was a loyal companion to Naomi, right? Because Naomi is lonely. She has had all of her family leave her. And so Ruth is a companion to her, keeping her from being lonely and losing every single person in her family that she has. She's also a hard worker. She's younger, and so she can go out and glean the fields and bring food home. And so she's doing the things that, you know, the older woman presumably would have done before, but now she's a little bit older and Ruth is younger, and so she can do those things for her. And then the third thing that she is she's defers to Naomi. She lets Naomi be the older, wiser woman that guides her. She listens to her and she says, okay, you want me to marry this man? I trust you and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to go about it in the way that you tell me to. She listens to her, knowing that she has more wisdom. And so if you are a young woman, then is there an older woman that you could look to that you might be able to benefit from their experience, their wisdom, and that you would go to and say, hey, you know, I might could do a little bit of work for you, do some of the things that maybe you aren't able to do anymore. And could you offer me your wisdom? And again, this doesn't have to be like an elderly woman that can't do anything for herself. Maybe it's a woman, like I was saying before, who has just a couple of kids and you have no children. And you say, hey, I'll come and I'll help you with your kids. And you can teach me how to be a good mom so that whenever I am in your same position, I will learn how. I'll see how you interact with your husband. I'll know how to be a good wife. I'll see how you interact with your children, and I'll learn how to be a good mom. Maybe it's just that. Or maybe it is an elderly woman, and you can go over there and you can say, hey, I can cook and I can clean for you, and I want to talk with you so that you can teach me things that maybe I need to know as a young woman so I don't make some mistakes that maybe you made or you saw other people make. And so these are the things that we can learn from Ruth. Another thing that we can learn from Ruth is that older people are sometimes lonely. They need our companionship. They need us to just come over and visit with them. Say, hey, I'll come over and I'll, you know, sweep the floor and we'll chat. Even if we're not getting anything from it as far as their wisdom, we're just having a chat with them, just listening to their stories and being someone there that they can enjoy. And so if you're a younger person that could help a widow or an elderly person, or someone who has some sort of need and you are able to fill that need, then do that. Okay, so this is what we can learn from Ruth. Now, what about Boaz? Boaz was their protector, their provider. He took care of them, and he also gave them hope for the future, right? Because this is a good temporary situation, Ruth going out and gleaning in the fields and taking care of Naomi, but they need a better permanent solution, right? They need a man to take care of them. In that day and age, you needed a man to take care of you. And so he provides that. He also provides the hope of a family for Ruth, her own children, her own husband, and a legacy for Naomi. And so if you happen to be a man that can provide protection, provision, care, hope for a future for someone else, either a young woman or just vulnerable people, people that need your protection, people that can't protect themselves because they are young or old or without a father or a husband of their own to take care of them. I told my husband whenever I had young kids and I was flying to meet him, he was stationed somewhere else at the time, and it was the first time that I had ever flown. I had little bitty kids, and I had a man behind me in line that offered to carry some of my bags so that I didn't have to, you know, tote my kids and my bags and all of those things onto the plane. And I told my husband later, I said, hey, the next time you're flying back alone with us, look for women like me. Look for people that might need a man to step up and say, hey, do you need me to carry that heavy thing? Hey, can I help you with that? Can I put that overhead baggage in there for you? Is there anything that I can do for you? And so be that man. You know, I'm not saying, you know, just to take care of, you know, people on some sort of big scale. I'm just saying that, just seeing somebody that needs something. And, you know, in saying that, also as an older woman, something that I try to do now for the younger women is encourage them. When I see them struggling in the grocery store with their kids, or I see them in a restaurant and worrying that, you know, their kids are bothering others or whatever, I always try to reassure them. And I say, hey, your kids are not bothering me. I don't have any children anymore. My youngest kid is 21 years old, and I miss those little ones. And so they're not bothering me. This is fun for me to watch. I enjoy seeing them laugh and be, you know, maybe a little rowdy and having fun, right? This doesn't bother me, and I encourage them. When I see them in the store and I know that they're struggling and they just have a couple more groceries to get and their kids are tired and hungry, I smile at them and I say, oh, he must be getting tired, you know, it's always hard. You know, I've been there. I know what it's like. You're trying to just get those last couple of things, you know, and whatever it is, whatever the situation is, I try to encourage the young moms because I know what it feels like. And I know that you have those eyes on you and you're wondering what those other people without children are thinking, or even those people that have, you know, older kids and they're not misbehaving in the grocery store. And you're wondering if they're looking at you thinking, you know, get your kid under control. And so I always try to be gracious to those women and just let them know, hey, I've been there. I understand your kids are not bothering me and I'm not judging you, you know? And so these are things that we can do as older women, older men to, you know, encourage the younger women. I just know what it's like to be a younger woman. And so I can relate further to that. But I did also need a man to come in and take care of me when I didn't have my husband there, right? And do things for me. I also, with having a husband deployed oftentimes, I had a guy down the street that I could call and say, hey, my lawnmower's not working. Is there a chance you could come over and look at it real quick? And so be that guy, the one that helps the women when they need it, okay? That takes care of the orphans and the widows and the elderly. Whether you're young or old or somewhere in between, man or woman, be the one that helps those in need, right? You see a need and you step up. Just be that kind of person. That's what we can see from these people. Help the least of these, right? That's what Boaz is doing. He is helping the least of these. And in saying that, listen to what it says in Matthew 25:34-40. And so it says, there will come a day when Jesus will say, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundations of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer and say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you as a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. And so these are the least of these, the people that are hungry, the people that are thirsty, the people that are strangers and need visiting, the people that have no clothes, the people that are sick and need visiting, the people that are in prison and need visiting. All of these people are in a situation where they need us. They might need someone who has something more than they have, more food, more clothes, more privilege in some way, and they need us. And so we can step up and do that, young or old, man or woman. We can step and do up and do those things. And then we can visit those. We can visit those that are sick. We can visit those that are in prison. We can visit those that are lonely. We can visit those that might be new in town, right? We can do all of these things. Take care of those that need our care. That's what he's saying. When you see a need, meet it. Do exactly what Boaz did, exactly what Ruth did, exactly what Naomi did, and step up when you see that someone needs you. Don't say, somebody else can do that. I'll let someone else do that. Oh, yes. I know that that is a need, but I've got my own things to worry about, you know, kind of like we talked about last week, and I'm not going to mess with you. Don't be that person. If you see a need, meet it, and then trust that God will send somebody to meet your needs. Don't worry about yourself. And so now I'm going to read to you several verses that talk about specifically if you are an older woman, a younger woman, an older man, all of those things, okay? These are specific things that we can do if that is our position in life, okay? In 1 Timothy 5:1-16, it says, do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father. Young men, encourage them as if they were your brothers. Older women, as if they were your mother. Young women, as sisters in all purity. He says in all purity because he's saying, you know, not like you are attracted to them just as if they were your sister, which is kind of what I was saying about my husband looking for women in the airport to help. That's not because he's attracted to them. And I wouldn't ever say, you know, to treat them in that way. And so that's what he's saying here. And then he says, honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make a good return on their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. Now, we're going to talk further about this in a moment, about taking care of your own family first so that other people don't have to take care of your family. So what he's saying here is that if there is a widow in your own family, you take care of them yourself. They took care of you. You're giving a good return to your parents and your grandparents by taking care of them. Don't leave them to the church. You know, the church needs to take care of those who are truly widows, who have no other family members to take care of them. That's what he's trying to say here. And he says, she who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God, and she continues in supplications and prayers night and day. So it says that she gives to the church, and the church gives to her because she doesn't have any family to pour into that they can in turn to pour into her. So the church is supposed to take care of them, and the widow is supposed to do things for the church if they don't have family. And then it says, but she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. So he's like, you know, but she doesn't need to be someone that is only taking care of herself. She needs to take care of the church and let the church take care of her needs and not, you know, ask too much of them or do too little for them. Command these things as well so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his own relatives, especially members of his own household, then he has denied the faith and he's worse than an unbeliever. Let a widow be enrolled if she's less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband and having a reputation of good works. If she has brought up her children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work. So enrolled means registered with the church as a widow that needs care. If she does all of these things, then she is someone that you should take care of as a church. But refuse to enroll younger widows, for when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry, and so incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. Besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, not only idlers, but gossips and busybodies, saying things that they should not. So he says, don't take care of the younger women because they're active, they're busy, they don't need you to take care of them so that they don't have to take care of everybody else, because that's just going to give them idle time. And so he says, so I would have the women, the young widows, marry, bear children, and manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander. Some have already strayed after Satan. And then it says in verse 16, if any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her take care of them. Let the church not be burdened so that they can care for those who are truly widows. And so this is the exact scenario between Ruth and Naomi, right? Ruth is taking care of the widow that is in her family. That widow is not remarrying because she is older, so she's allowing someone else to take care of her. And since she does have a family member to take care of her, the church is not doing it. And then Ruth is looking to remarry and get a husband to take care of her and not making the church take care of her. And then specifically in Titus 2:2-8, it gives specific instructions to the older men and the older women. And so in verse 2, it says, older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, in love, and in steadfastness. And then if you skip down into verse 6, because it then skips to the older women, I want to stick with the older men. So it says, likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled, Show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works, and in your teaching, show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that can't be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us. So this is what the older men are supposed to be like. They're supposed to show themselves in a specific way and then teach the younger men to be the same. And then the older women in verse 3, it says, likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good and train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. So specifically, this is the way that older men and women are supposed to teach the younger. And so in general, we can do these things. And then within our families, like it says in the 1 Timothy verse, we are supposed to take care of our families. And so moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas, sisters and brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, young, old, male, female, you have a part, right? Everyone has a role in the family. Everybody can step up and do something for someone else. We've talked about men and women, but also children, right? Children have a role in the family. One of their roles, obviously, is to obey their parents, but they also take care of their siblings. They also take care of their cousins. They teach them. They guide them. Everybody has a role. And so I want to ask you today, what is your role? What's your role in the family? Are you the comforter? Are you the protector? Are you the caregiver? Are you the provider? Are you the one that takes care of everything? Are you the one that knows people and you'll stay on that phone and call people until you get the job done? Are you the loyal one, the faithful one, the one that forgives, that gives mercy, that sticks by someone no matter how badly they mess up? Are you the confident one, the strong one, the courageous one? Or are you the quiet one that listens and lends an ear to other people? Are you insightful, thoughtful, able to see things that maybe everyone else in the family can't see? Are you helpful, encouraging, hopeful, gentle, caring? Are you decisive, detail-oriented, analytical? We need people like that, right? Are you the one that never gives up? The one that keeps going? Maybe you're just the funny one, the entertaining one, the one that helps everyone enjoy life, right? Everyone has a role. And some of them are contradictory. Maybe you're the peacemaker, or maybe you're the one that says, no, I'm standing up for justice. Maybe you're the one that takes charge. Or maybe you're the one that's good at following directions, listening to instruction. Maybe you're the supportive one that tries to never say anything negative. Or you're the one that says the thing that needs to be said, right? Maybe you're the stable one, the generous one, the hospitable one, the one that takes in all the strays, the one that's flexible and can adjust and help everyone else to adjust when everything is changing. We need everyone. And so what I'm telling you today is look at these three people and how they used what they could use in their time, in their station in life, and they helped people. And do the same. Whoever you are at your core, be that for the people that you love. Be the person that they need. Whoever that is. And then that might change. As you get older and your situation changes, that might change. And so you have to be ready for that and say, you know, that used to not be my role in the family, but now it is, and I'm willing to step up. These are the things that we can learn from Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz. And so think about the things that we've talked about today and see how you can fulfill your role in the family, in the community, and step up where you're needed. And so that's the lesson for this week. Next week, we're going to talk about Boaz and Ruth and see if he gets to marry her or if it's the other person. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss that next episode. All of these teachings on YouTube and podcast are free, but if you would like to read the lesson, get all of the scriptures, copy them, do them as a Bible study with your group, then you can subscribe to livethroughjesus.substack.com for $6 a month or $60 a year, and you can do these studies with me either personally or collectively. And then don't forget that I also started another podcast where we just get a little devotion, something that I learned from this that we can take away throughout the week that's much, much shorter than this study, and just what can we take away from it. And so make sure that you listen to that also. It's going to be a little bit different than what we talked about today and much shorter, and something that you can share with those that might not want to do a deep study. Also, you can go to the Substack and read the blog post that will be the same as the devotion if you would like to do it that way. So lots of options. And you can also join me on social media at Live Through Jesus, and I'll be posting clips from the podcast and then scriptures from the lesson and the blog post. So follow me there also. And then I'll see you back next week. Thanks and have a good day. Thank you.